Moncrief on News Talk
with the Dacia Duster. Shockingly affordable, and now with 3 months deferred payments too.
Now, while most smokers in the world are working hard to reduce the amount of smokers in their countries, in some parts of the world, the opposite seems to be happening. The Kingdom of Jordan now has the dubious distinction of having the highest smoking rate in the world. Among men, it's 80%. We're joined by Michael Safi, international correspondent for The Guardian, where these revelations were first made. Afternoon, Michael.
Hello.
So could you give us some indications of just how bad it is in Jordan? I did mention 80% among men, but would it generally be the case, would it be the norm to have a heavy smoking rate?
Well, that's right. I mean, to give you a sense of how bad it is here, people say that having a pack a day makes you a light smoker, and that they find that in clinics that people check into to try to quit smoking, that they have to tell them that they'll need to be patient with their kids for the next few weeks, because the chances are there's been so much smoke imbibed in the house that even the children have become nicotine dependent. And so that they themselves will be going through withdrawals in those first few weeks when a husband or a wife or indeed a family tries to quit smoking.
My word. And now, and what's the figures among women, do you know?
Yeah, the figures among women are in the mid-teens. So there's something around 14 or 15%. Which is actually considerably lower than in the West, where you see smoking rates among women being about on par with men. Here there's a huge gap between men and women, but the point is that it's actually growing. And one of the reasons it's growing is because of the shisha, the water pipe that you might have seen around a bit. It sort of has this very Middle Eastern kind of smell, and it's a big part of the culture here. But people are finding that it's a gateway for more and more women to pick up the habit.
Now, in Jordan, do they have a public health campaign around this? Are there constant warnings about smoking?
Now, you'll see in buildings, I mean, I'll give you an example. When I was reporting out this investigation, I met a lot of people in the government, and invariably they have a no smoking sign in the office where we're meeting. But equally, it was inevitable that every interview would reach a point where the person we were talking to would ask, do you mind if I have a cigarette? And so they'd sit there smoking, and right beside them would be a no smoking sign. So, there are campaigns, there are warnings. People know it's bad for you, but at the same time, there's no real enforcement. So, if you walk into a hospital and have a cigarette, no one's going to tell you to put it out. There won't be a fine. There's no real teeth to actually kind of breaking the law.
And I suppose an example of leading by example or not leading by example, smoking isn't even banned in the national parliament.
Yes, exactly. In fact, according to the Jordan Times, the local newspaper here, they tried to ban smoking back in 2014, but had to quickly rescind that order when they found that they were failing to get quorum for meetings under the dome in parliament because, frankly, too many MPs were out having a cigarette. So they had to quickly say, all right, you can start smoking again, and everyone came back to the chamber.
That lack of enthusiasm about enforcing the smoking regulations as they are, is this connected to the amount of revenue that Jordan earns from smoking?
That's a big factor in it. So the country makes up about 18% of its annual revenue from cigarette taxes. And so when you make up nearly one in five dollars in the treasury, it gives you a bit of clout as an industry. But that sort of conflict of interest extends down to the level of parliament, where they say that many MPs actually own restaurants, own cafes, and so they have an interest in making sure that people are allowed to smoke, they're allowed to smoke the water pipe. They see it as intimately connected, not just to the national revenue, but even to their own hip pocket.
Now, I suppose even more than that, the tobacco lobby in Jordan seems to be extraordinarily powerful.
Well, that was what I found in the course of my investigation, is people would tell me that tobacco industries are able to do things here that have been outlawed in a place like Ireland, like the UK, many decades ago. So one example they gave was that Philip Morris, the tobacco company, actually pays to refurbish schools. It gives out school bags, it gives out stationery, it runs youth career training. Basically able to do a lot of things directed at young people that we would never allow in the West. And so that was a big factor. And we were also able to document in our investigation that the tobacco company lobbyists were able to actually sit in on policy meetings, so on meetings where regulations for their own products were being debated and being shaped. They were able to have a seat at the table and, you know, voice their opinion on how things should be drawn up. And that was often done without anyone from the public health lobbies, from anti-smoking NGOs sitting opposite them. You know, that they had relatively, you know, free rein to voice their opinion about how these policies should be drawn up and implemented.
So could one be forgiven for thinking that perhaps companies like Philip Morris have shifted their focus away from, say, many Western countries where they're being regulated out of existence, maybe not as much, not quite out of existence yet, but regulated very heavily, to countries such as Jordan, where they're given more free rein?
Well, I think that's the biggest story. Now, one thing that tobacco industry observers tell me is that they haven't yet left the West, these companies. They're still there, they're still making money, and they're still pushing things like e-cigarettes, which they see as the future of their industry. But once you zoom out of the West and you come to a place like Jordan or to emerging economies in Africa, you find that the companies are much more aggressive, they lobby harder. And in the words of one expert here, that they're able to overwhelm what little civic society exists in some of these places. You know, they're powerful, they're very rich, and they're much more able to use that power in a place like Jordan than they would be in the UK or in Ireland.
Are there many anti-smoking NGOs in Jordan?
They're only really now beginning to spring up. I mean, I was able to kind of meet with two or three of them. They're mostly run by women. They're mostly run kind of out of the back room of their house. So it's really an emerging field, but they're finding that they are getting stronger. You know, they're beginning to kind of meet each other, to network, and they've got some big hopes about what they can do in the next few months and years. I mean, they see themselves as a David against, you know, the much bigger Goliath of these companies.
So Jordan wouldn't be unique in this regard. And would there be a suspicion, perhaps, that even though there's a high rate of smoking documented in Jordan, there are other countries where it's just as high, but the figures aren't there?
Well, that's the suspicion. It's that, you know, places like Lebanon, like Syria, like Iraq might have an even bigger smoking problem. It might be more than the 82% of men here who smoke or use e-cigarettes. But Jordan's in kind of a sweet spot because it's an advanced country, it's pretty stable, and so they're able to actually measure the extent of their problem. But if you did have that same research capacity in a place like Syria, you might find that it's more than 82% of men who are, you know, turning to cigarettes just out of culture or habit or just to relieve stress.
And you did mention that it's not just cigarettes we're talking about, it's e-cigarettes and vaping and the like. Are those big tobacco companies heavily involved in that end of the business as well?
Yeah, they are. So you'll find that Altria, the parent company of Philip Morris, is actually, you know, a big investor in Juul, which is one of the really big e-cigarette companies. You know, many big tobacco companies, they see the writing on the wall. They understand that in a place like the US or in Australia, you know, the rate of use of their products is declining. And so it's becoming important to try and shift to the future. And they see the future as being things like e-cigarettes that they can say are smoke-free, that they can claim are far less harmful than cigarettes. But then when you talk to scientists here, they say that the jury's still out on a lot of this stuff. You know, that they can't necessarily say that vaping, that e-cigarettes are safe, even though that they do, you know, there is evidence that it is safer than lighting up a cigarette.
Michael, thanks very much for speaking with us today. That was Michael Safi, international correspondent for The Guardian, and obviously based in the Middle East.
Moncrief on News Talk
with the Dacia range. Drive away today with no payments for the first 3 months.